Oh, God. We should have wrote it down. We're at that age, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Man.
Oh, well. It'll make it into the next one.
Today, there you go.
No.
All right.
Our special Star Wars edition.
Oh.
Okay, ready?
Just about.
Okay.
Let's get this done.
All right.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I'm Richard Lehman, and I write about stamps and stamp investing. I'm the president of Stamp Finders, and you are listening to Stamp Show here today.
It's hard to send up. It's hard to send up.
Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Welcome to Stamp Show here today, episode number 47. We're almost to 50, you guys.
Woo-hoo!
Can you believe it?
Wow.
I'm sitting here with Scott, Cash, and Jeff and Don, and I'm your host, Jessica. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Tell your friends you can find us on iTunes, Podbay, and Stitcher. Let's talk about stamps. So this week we'll be talking about stamp news. May the stamps be with you. Hashtag stamp stories, hashtag goodbye Columbia House. Our expert topic of the week is Stamp Auction Houses 101 and how to buy and sell and why. So, stamp news. It has been announced in geek and nerd corners the world over that our dear friends in the UK will be releasing some truly awesome Star Wars stamps on October 20. Finally, Jedi and Sith alike in Great Britain will have a way to send their fan mail to George Lucas in a true Star Wars fashion. Great Britain announced on October 20 a new series of 18 stamps will be released to commemorate not only the opening of the new Star Wars The Force Awakens movie less than 100 days away, but also will honor iconic legends from the prior 6 movies in the mega franchise. 12 stamps featuring characters from the movies including Episode 4 through 6, Hera, Leia, Luke, Han, the Emperor, Yoda, Obi-Wan, and Fett, a stormtrooper, and Vader.
But no Rax.
Oh, yeah.
No.
No, Rax didn't make it.
Hashtag stamp worthy.
Salacious.
Salacious didn't make it either.
Salacious needs a stamp, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Salacious totally does.
So, in miniature on each of these stamps are classic scenes from the representative movies, including characters such as C-3PO, R2-D2, and Chewie.
I wish I could do a good Chewie impersonation, but I can't.
The remaining 3 stamps of the 12 feature characters from The Force Awakens, including Finn, double N, the ominous Sith Kylo Ren, and Rey. Rey's stamps also includes the already iconic new droid, BB-8.
Which they're selling little toys of him.
Oh, I want one so bad.
Yeah, they roll around. It's a little ball with a head on top of it.
They're actually functional. They used electromagnetic repulsion technology to actually make it where his head sits there and spins all over the thing. It's not attached to his body.
Yeah, so there's a motor inside of the ball, and the head sits on top magnetically so that it always stays on top.
And you control them with a remote control from your Android or Apple phone. And you can zip him all over the place. He has a built-in camera and a projector so that you can project messages on the wall, like, help me on Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. Yeah, $140. They're currently on 3 to 4 month back order.
And now they're going to be in 6 months because we read it.
Yeah. There's YouTube
right,
videos
Cash,
on them.
Get that on
find
the
them.
List.
There you go, yeah.
Where are you too late
here,
for Christmas?
Let's show the people on Periscope what the stamps look like. I pulled them up on my computer.
Here. Sure, while Jessica talks about the other part.
The other Satanent sheet of 6 stamps features a breathtaking spacescape taking place in front of the distant Death Star.
Ooh. It really looks cool.
Long
it is totally. It's fantastic. The artwork they did on it is just
I think it's better
amazing.
Than the U.S. sheet.
Oh, by far, by far.
Each stamp includes classic ships made famous throughout the series, including Luke's X-Wing, TIE Fighters, AT-AT, Special Forces, X-Wings, and
they're
TIEs.
They're not AT-ATs.
They're AT-ATs.
AT-ATs?
Yeah.
I always called them AT-ATs growing up.
Well, that's how they're spelled out. Because you don't say ATS for the other ones.
You say TIE. You don't say T-I. It's a TIE fighter. No, it's a TIE fighter.
Okay. And, of course, the legendary Millennium Falcon, which is, as any proper Star Wars fan knows, a modified YT-1300 Corellian light freighter that can make the Kessel run in less than 12 parsecs.
Yeah.
My nerd badge, thank you.
And for anybody out there who goes, parsecs, that's not a unit of time. It's not a unit of time. He's saying he could take a shorter route than the other prescribed pirate route that the other guys took. That's what it was supposed to be.
Yes.
He was that good.
The stamps were meticulously designed with great detail given to every aspect of the stamp. Even the font used that depicts the rate reads first for first class mail was done in the original Star Wars font. Awesome.
What Star Wars font? I need to look for that on the
You can get it for free. Just go to Google search, type in Star Wars font free, and you can actually get it and put it in your font dictionary on your computer.
Oh, I got to do that.
That's going to happen.
And you can do Star Trek, too. That's my other favorite.
Yeah.
Star Trek fonts.
So Royal Mail said these stamps were created to honor the series, of which the UK is the third biggest fan base in the world. So I'm guessing US is number one. Who's number two?
Who would be number two, yeah.
Probably Canada, eh?
Oh.
China.
Oh, yeah, probably China. Yeah, like that. Asia, no, in general.
Yeah.
So Great Britain is very proud of the fact that much of Episode 7 was filmed on their soil, and that the movie includes local British talent as well. They credit the Star Wars franchise with giving them an incredible boost to their filmmaking. You can pre-order the sheets at royalmail.com/StarWars, and they will ship out on October 20 if you can get through. We tried earlier.
Yeah.
I
tried a couple hours ago, and if you're in the U.S., you're probably, since it's a government agency, pseudo-government agency, the way their website works, the security is so strict that with a U.S. credit card, you have to get prior authorization from your bank. Chase just automatically rejected it. So just heads up, you can buy them, but you're going to have to go through a couple of hoops to get a hold of them.
Yeah, I have a funny feeling this is going to be a very, very large print run.
Probably.
So nobody is going to run out of them.
To get both sheets, they want 2.5 pounds shipping, and the sheets themselves, I think, are like 12.5 pounds, which it's 14, 15. That would come out to, what, about 22 or 24 U.S. dollars, somewhere in there right now?
Mm-hmm. Really?
But the dollar's a little stronger in the pound right now.
There's 6 stamps plus... There's 18 stamps.
Well, it's...
So 18 stamps, each one is like 50 cents equivalent.
No.
So that's $9.
You get a little informational card with them if you buy them together as a set.
Oh, good. I need that informational
card. Collector's card?
Absolutely.
Something like that.
Nice.
Does it talk about racks?
No, it should, darn it.
I want to see what happens to his poor widowed wife and his three
His kids are
going to
be the villains
kids.
In episode 8.
Oh, there you go. Good one.
Okay, so...
And for people who don't know what we're talking about, listen to the last episode.
Yeah, we won't get into it again.
Okay, so our hashtag STEM stories is kind of a sad story.
Oh,
Columbia
sadder
House,
than racks?
Yes.
Yes, has closed its doors after umpteen years. What does it have to do with stamps? Well, when I was in high school, I used to love looking through the magazines, pulling out their... it was like perfected stamp sheets.
They were. They still sell. Yeah.
They're Cinderellas, technically.
Yep.
I used to love to stick them on things. I love the taste of the gum on them. I don't know why.
And that's just weird.
And I was so anal retentive. I love to like fold them and get them just right, torn apart.
Perfectly
done. You were good for breaking sheets.
Yeah, make pretend that I was ordering the CDs.
Oh, I know. You'd stick all your favorites like inside your locker and stuff at school.
Oh, yeah.
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 I remember playing with those a lot. They had those. They've had that since the
late
80s.
I remember back when you had your choice of vinyl records or cassette tapes.
Oh, my gosh. I can go back to cassette tapes.
Yeah, they did have 8-track at one point.
They did. And, that 1996 was their height at $1.4 billion.
Did you ever order anything from them?
I did.
I did not.
I did. That's when I got
was afraid of getting in trouble with my parents. What is this? Where did this come from?
It was my own money.
Oh.
That was the first time I got my taste of mid-90s electric heavy metal music. I got my 10 CDs for the price of one, and it included things such as Slayer, Metallica, Megadeth, Korn, Who else? There were a couple other big groups at the time. Yeah, that my parents really thought that was just noise.
It is just noise.
Yeah, so well. in 2014, the revenue had dwindled to $17 million, which I guess was too little to keep going.
Of course.
Nobody buys CDs anymore.
Well, nobody, everybody downloads it on the internet. They were talking about the entire music industry going through a massive change because the money that used to be there isn't there anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, they said, it's throughout the industry. Even the standards that they use to issue gold and platinum records don't hold true anymore.
Yeah.
Because nobody sells enough to get a million actual albums sold. That used to be easy.
Yeah.
And it's not anymore. It's darn near impossible. So they're going to have to rewrite how they do some of their rules.
Mm-hmm. You could get 50 million downloads without any problem. You know, they won't give you a platinum record anymore. Now they'll give you like a platinum computer keyboard or something.
Right. Well, I mean, by that standard, Psy, Gangnam Style, he's got 2 billion something views?
Yeah, exactly.
He needs an award for that. But by modern music standards, that's never going to get recognized.
Nothing. So, I guess they were plagued with low-grade mail fraud. Anybody here familiar with that?
Oh, we knew all the stories.
Make up fake names and have them deliver to your address to get the 12 free CDs.
Oh, they sent them to me and I was 14 years old.
Oh, no kidding. I mean,
So, they said that it was kind of a joke at the company because people said it happens and they were also partaking in it. Employees, not just new people.
Well, when you can get ripped off by an 8-year-old kid, you know you've got a problem.
I think my dog got CDs from Columbia House at one point.
Well, I know a person who registered their cat to vote.
What?
So, yeah, just filled out the form for the cat.
Did they get a
got
mail-in
an absentee ballot?
Ballot
for
oh my gosh!
And it wasn't like it will, you know, some weird name. It was like Friskies, you know, something like
Boots.
That. It, Boots or something like that. It was an obvious cat name.
Oh, that's terrible.
Okay, so tell us what you used to do with your Cinderellas of Columbia House at hashtag stamp stories, hashtag stamp worthy at Twitter.
Yeah, by the way, stamp worthy. Racks.
Oh.
Yes. Not.
Salacious.
Salacious and
my
racks.
Vote goes for salacious. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so updates. Cash, what you got?
I have a major update. This is a earth-shaking, groundbreaking.
Oh, no.
We have found out that the tallest stamp ever issued by the United States was indeed the C-3PO stamp. It is much taller than any other stamp.
Than the balloon stamp?
Well, we were talking about was the Wilt Chamberlain stamp the largest stamp.
And then there was the balloon stamp.
And then we were questioning whether the balloon stamp was bigger. The C-3PO stamp that comes off the Star Wars sheet is much larger than all of them. It is the largest stamp.
Taller.
Printed. Taller.
Not larger.
I'm sorry, taller. Yes, you are correct. Tallest stamp.
What is the single largest stamp for the U.S.?
The largest would probably be like a beer stamp.
Beer stamp. Oh, okay.
Those guys are pretty big.
Well, there are other tax paids.
Yeah.
I can think of a few. Oleomargarine is bigger than a beer stamp.
Yeah, but that's not a federal.
Malt liquor is bigger than
how big are those compared to the large Persian rugs?
Oh, easily double. Probably triple.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like...
No, they're not that much bigger.
It's definitely like 2 Persian rugs... And plus, maybe half of another one.
Okay, so then I should have probably asked, what's the largest postage stamp?
There you go. Okay, now, let's think about it. Let's think about it. What's the biggest land?
The Star Wars sheet does have a few large ones in it.
What about the multi?
Area-wise, I think that probably the Darth Vader, because, again, it's not as tall as a C-3PO, but it's much wider.
Yes.
What about the multiple dollar value Mars landing stamp?
Oh, good point. Ooh,
yeah, that one's point. Really
that
big.
That one's going to be larger than Darth Vader.
Yeah,
for
by
sure.
far.
Aha, now we're going to have to look this up.
Yeah.
To the interwebs.
Yep.
Yeah, because we can't count souvenir sheets because, you know, it's got to be a perforated stamp. Yeah.
Okay, all of our listeners, tell us, what is the largest U.S. postage stamp.
Postage. Has to be postage.
Postage.
Not this back of book stuff.
Yeah. None of that nonsense. Yeah.
Okay, so I don't have anything really. I'm going to go to an expert topic. Okay.
You don't have anything to say?
No updates, nothing.
There's like no new Hello Kitty stamps or something?
Yeah.
What?
Cash's corrections?
I think that's it for that.
We don't get to smack Cash on the side of the head today?
Well, we did for the size of the stamp.
I don't know. Do you have no corrections?
No corrections. No. I listened to the last episode, and I was literally perfect.
Oh, dear.
Good edits, Jeff. Good edits.
Do that again. I missed it.
Okay, so our expert topic of the week is Stamp Auctions 101. This week's topic came up at lunch today. Jeff and I placed our first stamps for sale at one of our closer auction houses, Harmer Auctions.
H.R. Harmer.
Oh, H.R. Harmer.
They are different auction houses with the Harmer name.
So we can talk about that too. Yeah.
Okay, we had some questions about this process. Cash and Scott thought it would make an excellent topic for us to cover. Okay, so what is a stamp auction house? What makes them special from a random auction?
For those that don't know.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, they specialize in selling stamps. That makes them a stamp auction house. There are different kinds. Obviously, you have ones that are run like any other house that you a place that you would think of when you think of an auction. And probably everybody's seen movies and things like that where they have auctions of artwork and things like that. And it's kind of run like that. You have a room full of people and you got an auctioneer up front and he calls it. And each item comes up in turn for bidding and for sale. And it moves a little bit faster than a lot of these
and it's different
art auctions. But
it's different than what you see on TV because actually people don't like touch their nose or stuff like that. Generally speaking, you'll have a paddle, which is a large card with a number on it.
Mm-hmm. Usually it's a card.
And you hold up the... Yeah, sometimes it's like if it's a paddle or whatever. But you hold it up, and if he sees your number, it means you bid. If he doesn't see the number, then he knows you're not bidding. So it's not like somebody's actually going to like cough and bid $10,000 on something. That doesn't happen in the real world.
Oh.
Well, I mean, I saw it on Dick Van... I think every 1950s TV show has had one where the major characters accidentally buy something at an auction because they twitched or scratched or something like that. And great TV, not real world.
Oh, well, there's a funny episode of Friends where that happened, where Joey goes to a benefit dinner, and they had a yacht up for auction.
It was a silent auction.
It was a silent auction.
Yeah.
And so he thought he was putting down the price closest to the value and ended up winning and getting stuck with the boat.
And it was like, Price is Right. He's like, I guessed it.
That means I win, right?
No. But anyway, generally you find... you can find all sorts of material there. They have big auction houses that are very formal like that. And then there are auction houses that are much smaller. A lot of times, sometimes a dealer will run them. And they can be anything from just a mail bid sale where you send in your bids by mail. And he has a closing date. And on that date, he goes through all of the bids that were submitted. And the highest bid wins. And if there's a tie, the one that came in first wins.
Or no bid reaches what... Here's one of the things, too, when you have these smaller ones, and even the bigger ones, they have reserves.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put up inverted Jenny C3A, and you send in a $10 bid, and through some weird reason, you're the only person who sent in that bid, you did not win for $10. They would reject you outright.
Yeah.
You know, they do have reserves.
Yeah, most auction houses have a policy where they won't accept bids less than a certain percentage of the low estimate, and that's to protect the seller from having to sell something, even if there's no reserve on it, and that's to protect the seller from losing, selling something incredibly rare that's incredibly expensive for a song. And it's just good business practice for them to do that. Now, sometimes you'll see things like eBay. That's an auction site. You can get stamps and you bid just like in an auction, except it's all electronic. So, and sometimes a dealer will run his sale that way. Sometimes, and
a lot of auction houses right now run them electronically. You will be bidding against people who are on their computer.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Most in the old days, you had two choices, or actually three. You hired an agent to be there. You were there yourself, or you did a mail-in. You sent in your mail-in bids. The problem with the sending in the mail-in bids is whatever you put down is your bid. So you could have gotten it cheaper if you had been there. You know, there's a stamp. You want it. You think it's going to go for $1,000. You put in a $1,000 bid. If you buy it, you're going to buy it for the full $1,000. Well, whereas if you get an agent,
some auction houses don't do that. They consider your bid to be a maximum, and they just throw it in the mix.
Oh, and they'll sell like an increment.
Right.
Those are very uncommon now. They are out there.
Well, that's how eBay works, exactly.
But you have to read the fine print in the beginning of an auction catalog or on the website to find out what the terms of the sale are. And it should state in there if you submit a $1,000 bid, if that is a hard and concrete bid, or if that's your maximum bid, and they will proxy bid up to that like eBay does.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, eBay will do that. Generally speaking, you have to realize that these auction companies are trying to get the highest price possible for a couple of reasons, not the least of which is they get paid a commission based on how much money.
Now, generally, when you submit, when you have an item that goes to auction, usually the seller pays a commission on whatever it sells for.
Well, let's...
The buyer also pays a commission on that. Both of those commissions go to the house.
Let's talk about buying first and then selling in the second part.
Yeah, we split it up.
So let's split it up because otherwise we're going to confuse people. Yeah. Let's just talk about buying right now and how to...
Well, we're just talking about auctions in general right now.
Yeah.
Not necessarily buying and selling.
Okay.
And, you know, so just be aware that there is commissions on both sides of the sale. And that's how the auction house pays for the auction catalog and for their staff and for their facilities. And so... That's how they make their money. And then obviously...
You also bring up a good point there with the catalog. The larger auction companies all have a catalog. It will have each item described accurately. And generally speaking, if it's individual items, it'll show pictures.
Yes.
So in general, before we get into the differences between buying and selling, at what point would you want to consider an auction house over other venues for buying or selling stamps?
Generally speaking, you would go to an auction house if you are looking for either quality or rarity. The really expensive stuff and the really high-quality stuff tends not to show up on eBay. That's not the eBay market. You have auction companies, especially like the Siegel's Rarities of the World auction, where... This stuff flows. And if you want to find, you know...
Well, but dealers also buy out of those auctions. So you can buy that material from a dealer. You just will likely pay a higher price.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
When you bid in one of those auctions, you're bidding against other collectors and dealers for that item.
Well, whenever you use a middleman, you have to pay the middleman.
Right. Right. So if you're trying to get an item for as little money as possible... Yes, you want to buy at an auction.
Now, generally speaking, and again, this varies widely, but generally speaking, most auction companies will not run an item that is going to sell for less than between, say, $150 and $300.
You're talking about the top tier
mm-hmm.
auction companies.
I'm talking about the Kelleher's and the H.R. Harmer's and the Siegel's.
You can figure that there are three levels of auction houses. The top tier, we're talking about auction houses that do business both nationally and internationally, like Siegel Auctions or Cherry Stone Auctions, at one point Heritage Auctions. You want to go to Europe, go to Christoph Gartner Auctions. You go over to Asia, you can go to Kelleher Rogers, who also have a U.S.
or
auction house.
InterAsia.
Interasia. So those are the top tier levels. And yes, you're right. The minimum level that you're going to see, they're going to want to get a minimum of about $120 to $150, maybe a little higher, maybe a little lower, per lot.
Minimum.
Minimum when they sell. So on items that would sell for less than that, they kind of discourage or won't even take
they don't
items
take
like that. Or they will put them in larger right. lots to bump the value up.
So it sounds like you actually just answered one of the other questions. When would you pick an auction house over something like eBay?
Well, if you pick a mid-level auction house or a low, I would consider eBay to be a low-level auction house because you can pretty much...
I would consider it the lowest.
Yeah. you can put whatever you want up on eBay.
No offense, eBay.
Now, you can start, and you can also start it at whatever you want. You have a $1 item, you can start it at $10.
Yeah.
You might find somebody to buy it, or you might not.
But the other thing, too, is that the auction houses stand behind their descriptions. eBay does not stand behind the description.
Right.
So you can have a person who lists a U.S. number one in perfect condition and get a...
Photocopy.
Exactly. Yeah.
They used to protect buyers a little better with that. Jessica and I used to sell stamps on eBay, and they used to make us sign a digital disclaimer that said that the facts that you were representing in your auction terms are indeed correct and accurate to the best of your knowledge. It's this entire little paragraph. I don't know why they did away with that, but they stopped doing that program, and it's made it just a little more frustrating because now you're worried everybody's going to call what you're saying on eBay, you know, that you're misrepresenting.
I don't know if they got that rid of that completely because I see that every time I try to revise one of my auction eBay listings.
Oh, that could be the difference.
I get that page.
It could be the difference between every time you post versus every time you try to edit. That makes sense.
But the thing, too, is that a person listing a stamp realistically can put in anything that they can literally type.
Yes.
An auction company has professional describers, people who are knowledgeable in the industry. A seller on eBay may have no idea what a reperf or a regum is. The auction companies do.
Well, and again, you're talking the top tier. The mid-tier, you're going to get some that are either professional or semi-professionals, and they do know what they're doing, but they are dealing with lesser quality material, and obviously...
I'm going to say the mid-quality, or the mid-tier, is going to be stamp shops or stamp companies that carry a auction for their own material but also take some consignments.
Well, I think most auction houses, even the top-level auction houses, most of them have some items that they do own.
Yes, but in the mid-tier, most of the items will be owned.
I would say a large percentage, maybe 60, 70, 80% at times.
So really what it is...
will be owned by the auction house. And that's something like Applebaum or... those kinds of auction houses.
There are a zillion of them. They put out sporadic. So it's not like once a month or three times a year.
Instead of they get enough together to do one.
When they get enough together, they do one.
Well, there's other places like Hunt & Company out of Texas or Sam Houston out of Texas. They have a regular schedule which they do auctions. It's either every 6 weeks or every 2 months or something like that. And the quality of their material is very good. And it is very well described, fairly priced, but it's not, you can find $1,000 and up items in those sales, but the vast majority of it might be $300 or $400 items,
right?
And that's where you're going to find nice items for your collection that aren't going to break the bank necessarily.
Yeah, the mid-range places, and they also may have multiples of an item.
Correct.
So the top three winners may all get one.
When was the last time you picked up a Siegel catalog and didn't see more than one U.S. number one in it?
Well, some of the mid-tier places will have multiple item sets, and the top three winners will each get one.
I know what you mean. They used to do that with a certain kind of pins we used to collect.
Dutch auctions.
Dutch auctions.
They picture a one set, and then so it might be like
they won't
a set of Kansas.
Or generally speaking, they won't
it might be a Kansas-Nebraska set.
Right.
And they might have three sets available, and the top three bids get a set.
Exactly.
That's what we mean by a Dutch auction. There's multiple items. And you see that on eBay, too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
For listings.
Okay, so you wanted to split it into two categories. So with buying, let's start with buying. What's the process if you want to go buy stamps at an auction?
Well, there's three ways. Like I said, is you can be there at the auction, and you will actually get a little paddle with a number on it, and you hold it up.
It can be fun, but it can also be very boring.
It can be incredibly boring.
If you have a long run of lots between the ones that you're interested in, it can get very boring.
Nobody dukes it out.
Yeah, they may do 300 lots an hour,
and
maybe less.
Now, when I attend auctions fairly frequently, and when you have the auctioneer up there, you also have somebody sitting next to him that's monitoring the internet, because a lot of times these higher level auctions are run simultaneously live and on the internet, and you can bid live on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll be looking for bidders on the floor, but they'll also be listening to their side for bids coming from the internet.
And I think that's the best way now, today, to buy stamps is on the internet.
Absolutely.
Listen to the auction on the internet while you're working.
Sit at home.
Yeah.
My favorite site is Stamp Auction Network, and you just sign up for the auction houses. You get a pre-approval. You can get a pre-approval to bid in an auction house. And you sign up on the site, and what you do is you submit information, and they send it off the auction house, and the auction house says, okay, we'll accept you as a bidder. They give you a bidder number. And then you just sit there when the auction is on, and you listen to it, and you watch the lots come up, and you click on the bids when you want to bid. It's very quick. It's very easy. It goes right through. They already have your address. They know where to ship it, send you the bill, all of that.
Yep.
And it's really good.
Now, the scary part is that when you're this is human nature, unless you've been dealing with it for a very long time. When your lot comes up, your adrenaline pumps.
Oh, just absolutely.
Absolute normal. And that's when you have to sort of use discretion.
I had that happen to me one time. I was bidding in an auction, and my lot was coming up, and I was so hopped up on adrenaline that I bid on the lot before it and missed the one that I wanted. Yeah. I ended up buying the lot. I didn't want it. Yeah. I wanted the next one.
So one of the biggies that people have to realize when they are bidding in person is if you want to spend $1,000 for a stamp, first of all, you have to pay, and these are much higher than they used to be historically, typically 15% to 18% on top of your purchase price.
No, it's anywhere from 15 to 20%.
Yikes.
Some of them are going up to 20%. And if you pay by credit card, they can bang you for another 3%. So you have to really be careful.
Yeah, you have
about
to.
Again, we call it the tip.
Again, you have to go back and read the terms of the auction.
So be aware of how much you have to tip the auction company.
So you could think you're bidding $1,000 on something. All right, I'm going to pay $1,000 for that. And in reality, you're going to be spending $1,200.
Right. So
depending on what state you are in and where the auction house is, you might also be paying sales tax as well.
Right.
So the cool thing
there is, again, if you add sales tax into it, you can be paying 25% over your bid.
Ooh, do your research first.
Right.
Oh my gosh, find out what you're
going to
pay.
So if you want to spend $1,000 for a stamp, your maximum bid should be like $750 if you're going to pay tax on it.
Well, I bid every once in a while in a local estate auction place, and this week I went and I bought an item for $10. My winning bid was $10. And I walked out of there and it cost me just over $15 because I had to pay the lot processing fee and then I had to pay the percentage fee, and then I had to pay the sales tax on top of the $10.
Yeah. So additional fees, that was an extra 50%.
Yeah, and the lower price the item is, the higher those fees can,
right,
as a percentage can end up being.
Oh, yes, they can make more money out of it.
So now here's the double whammy when you get that adrenaline rush. Is you sit there and you say, okay, my maximum bid is $750, and you think in your head, this is worth $1,000, and you bid all the way up to $1,000, or you go, screw it, I'm going to go ahead and go over it, I'm going to bid $1,100. And all of a sudden, you get it for $1,100, and you go, oh man, I didn't pay $1,000 for this. Now I'm up to $1,400.
Oh, I watched a friend of mine do that with a signature autograph that she wanted. She ended up getting into a bidding war in the last 30 seconds with somebody on eBay in eBay's early days, mm-hmm. paid $350 for an autograph that was maybe worth $60 at the time.
Yep.
So, and it's because she got crazy hyper excited.
Now, but here's the other side is, if you find something that is rare and unusual, and you say this is worth $1,000, and all of a sudden it goes for $2,000. $2,500, $3,000. You sit there and you go, is this really worth that much, or is this a bidding war?
Mm.
I mean, my favorite story, and this is from Larry Brassler, who is an auctioneer for H.R. Harmer, or was, and he was talking about two people sent their secretaries to an auction.
Yes.
And each one just said, buy that stamp. So the secretaries had no clue what the stamp was worth. So the stamp comes up. They both raise their hands. And he keeps going, you know, $1,000, $1,100, $1,200, $1,300. And he's looking at it, and the thing's worth maybe $300.
He gets to $10,000.
Well, yeah, he gets to some insane price and says, excuse me, you too. What are your bids? And the one said, well, my boss just said to put up my card and buy it. And the other girl goes, oh, my boss said the same thing. Goes, okay, stop. We're going to back up here.
Yeah. Just as they can use discretion to decline to accept a bid, they can also stop people from doing stupid things.
Well, realistically, if that stamp, realistically, that bidding was never going to end.
Yeah. Now, I got your stamp. It was $80,000.
Yeah.
I got it.
And it was only worth $80.
Yeah. So the number one thing that the buyer has to be aware of is the amount of the tip. Once you understand how much the tip is going to be and you can sort of control your adrenaline, which is hard, that just takes practice. Well,
the biggest thing, I think, when you're bidding is – review the lots. If you can, go to the viewing room and look at the actual item. Make notes. And if you decide you want to buy it, decide how much you want to pay. How much would you pay for this item? Don't consider that it's in an auction. How much would you pay for this item? You can look at what the catalog value is. You can look at the condition. You can look at whatever you want. But how much is it worth to you? Write that number down so that when you get into the auction floor, you then have a number in front of you that says, okay, I know you're on adrenaline, but this is your number. If you bid over it, realize that you might be overspending.
Yeah.
This is the number you're happy with.
And that's where proxies come in, right?
And if you say, well,
proxies are great because they don't care.
Right.
You give them $1,000 and they take out their calculator and they go, okay, we'll reduce it by 18%. We'll reduce it by 7.2%. Okay, it is now $672.55.
Max.
Let's bid.
And they don't get it. It's going, sorry, you didn't get it.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's what you, if you decide I want to spend $500, I would be willing to pay $500, then you go and you do exactly that. You take off the tip, you take off the sales tax, and you find out what your actual final bid number can be to get it for no more than your $500.
But that's also realizing, too, that the other buyers have kind of done that same consideration, right?
Yes.
Hopefully.
Well, yeah. Yes, except that everybody does not value something at the same.
I mean, this is for your protection. I mean, you can go in cold and just kind of, oh, that, and when an item comes up, oh, I got to have it, and put your paddle up and spend money. You can do that. But if you want to budget your money, which most of us are on a budget, You want to budget your money. You have to be smart about how you bid at an auction.
Yeah.
And you were talking about proxies. Let's talk about agents. An auction agent is somebody that goes to the auction and sits there and on the floor and bids for you. And
but more than that, one of the major things that an auction is or agent does is you say, I want to bid this amount, and will you check the stamp and see that it's okay?
Yes. And so you go to the viewing, which a lot of times the viewings are anywhere from a couple of days to a week or more ahead of the auction, and the auction house will have all of the lots in a room, and you can you just tell them which lots you want to look at. They bring them to a viewing area, and you sit down, you can look at them. And an auction agent will look at those lots for you and give you his professional opinion mm-hmm. whether it's going to meet your quality and standards for your collection. And you may find out that it will or it won't work. Generally, an auction agent charges, I think, 1 or 1.5%.
It is highly negotiable.
With a maximum?
Incredibly negotiable.
Oh, absolutely it's negotiable. But at a maximum, it's maybe 1 or 1.5%.
Well, no, sometimes at a max, it's actually fee. 3.
Sometimes
I've seen
it's
people
a flat
who charge
fee.
3.
Well, it varies from agent to agent right. as well.
Expertise level, too, I would imagine.
Now, certain auction houses, certain agents are basically ply their trade at certain auction houses. Not every agent is going to attend every single auction. So,
definitely not.
Contacting the auction house prior to the auction to find out which agents are going to be at the auction, if you want to use an agent, is a good thing.
And by the way, when these agents show up, these aren't just people who come off the street or anything. These agents are there every auction. The auctioneers know them. Not only that, but the auctioneer will work with the auction agent so that if the auction agent falls behind or has a conflict of paperwork, the auctioneer will stop because these guys are where they get their money from. You know, these guys are their bread and butter. And you'll see they sit right up in front with their laptops, and the auction agent or the auctioneers treat them very, very well.
Absolutely.
So you are not – this is not you're hiring some guy off the street to bid $675. You're actually hiring a person who has an in at the auction.
A professional, yeah.
And you're hoping that he gets it for less than your $675.
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, you know, if they charge 1% or 2%, which normally they do, you know, it doesn't take but one bid increment to pay him off. So if he saves you one bid increment or, you know, on every other stamp.
Well,
it doesn't even have to be every stamp. It's every other stamp.
If you're looking at the difference between $1,000 and $1,100, well, 1% on $1,000 is $10.
Yeah.
If he saves you that last bid increment, you've paid for him 10 times over.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to selling.
Yeah, how does selling work? What's the process? And Jessica can even weigh in on this because she just walked in on her first one. How does that work?
This is really easy. You take your stamps to the auction company. You say, here, sell these for us.
Pretty much.
So that's the basic. But let me tell you what you should do in addition to that. The first thing you should do is you should drop it off already semi-lauded.
Break it up into what you think it should into groups of items that you think should sell together. Now, if you have a particularly expensive item, obviously you want that to sell by itself.
Mm-hmm.
If you have some moderately priced items, you can kind of maybe put a few of those together.
Well,
but they should be related in some way.
If you have 2 boxes of Russia and 3 boxes of Canada and 4 boxes of other stuff,
throw them, mix them in a pile, and then
all in one lot. But you go up there and say, no, excuse me, can you put the Russia separate and the Canada separate? And they'll go, okay, fine, not a problem.
I know Jessica had about 50 miscellaneous stamps that were in the, you know, $20 to $60 range. And she asked them, can you help me break these up into lots? And HR Harmer is very nice. And they said, yeah, sure, we can find out lots where stuff are similar like that. So that was on their recommendation. Yeah. Yep. That was much appreciated.
And I'm not a good example because they were very confused by me.
Yeah, they're not used to a young woman coming in, can I auction these? And they're all identified and certified. Yep. And she kind of blew their minds.
Well, that's another thing is, if you have an item that's going to go into auction and it's going to get major money, define major money any way you want. I call it $300. I've heard other people who say that's too low. It should be $500. I've heard people who say, no, it should be like $50 or something. I draw the line at $300. That's just where I draw the line. Get it certified. I don't care who you get it certified by, as long as it's a reputable company. I mean, we work here at PSE, so submit it to us. But realistically, submit it to anybody, because the auction house wants a certificate on it. It will sell better with a certificate 100% of the time. I speak with people who, have submit 20 lots. 10 of them are certified and 10 of them are uncertified. They'll sell 2/3 of the stuff that's certified and 0% of the uncertified.
Well, I'll tell you this too, a little secret that we got when Jessica dropped our stuff off. We dropped off nothing that was not certified. I know it's a double negative, but everything we had a cert with it. They charged us less.
Yep.
Because they said, hey, our identifier guy, he doesn't have to do anything. He's going to do a real quick little description knowing it's the Scott number and it's done.
The second thing is you have the right to return items. You do not have the right to return an item that has a certificate that was issued within the last, and it varies,
usually,
5 years.
Usually it's 5 years. The standard for most auction houses, if it has a valid certificate that is less than 5 years old, sometimes it's less than 3 years old, then that item is not returnable for condition.
Yeah.
Or identification.
Yeah.
Interesting. See, that I didn't know.
That sale is done. So they really like getting certified stuff. But more than that, they want the expensive stuff certified. The buyers want it. It
less headache later.
So much less headache that the stuff sells better. The third thing is you know better what your stuff is than they do. I mean, if you drop off a bunch of stuff, you know what you're dropping off. They have no clue.
They have to start from zero and identify it all.
Exactly. So the better identified you can give it, the better they're going to treat you.
And also, that's another thing that you can use to negotiate, because when you're selling, obviously, you have to pay a fee when they sell an item. Just like on eBay, the eBay takes a little percentage, or PayPal takes a percentage off of your final value. Well, the auction house does too. So they make money on the buyer and the seller.
Well, they charge the buyer 15, 18, 20%.
But they negotiate with the seller to bring in items.
The seller could pay as little as 10%.
That's what we're paying.
Sometimes it goes less. I mean, I know a person who submitted a $125,000 collection. He got a 0% commission.
Well,
to be expected. It's a $100,000 consignment.
The first time I sold something at auction, I had a 0% commission because I contacted the auctioneer and he says, I want to put that on the cover of my auction catalog.
Yeah.
It was a rare item.
Right there.
Yeah.
So in lieu of my seller's commission, I said, yes, go ahead. You can publicize it and put it on the cover of the catalog. And so I got a 0% seller's commission, which was kind of nice.
So generally speaking, everybody out there should find out what the commission is. Every auction company has a pre-printed form. And generally speaking, the pre-printed form will have pre-printed a 25% seller's commission. Everybody negotiates that down. The people who pay the 25% are generally people who have no clue what they have got.
The ones that literally come in with albums and go, here, sell this.
Exactly. And they will charge them 25% because they're saying,
we did all the work.
Well, okay. We did everything.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, the people who are listening to this podcast are at least a little advanced in stamp collecting.
Well, at least they're knowledgeable about what they own.
Right. Yeah. Nobody who is listening today should be paying a 25% seller commission. Everybody, if you are putting stuff into auction, say, hey, I heard from Cash on Stamp Show here today that I shouldn't pay 25%. And they'll say, damn, Cash, okay, here's 10 or 15 or whatever. But that goes into the second part. Let's go back to that $1,000 stamp. Now, the stamp is worth $1,000. How much money are you going to get? Well, the seller is going to take off 25% if he pays tax, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you as the buyer, I'm sorry, the buyer is going to pay 25%, so he's going to reduce the amount he's going to pay by 25%. So now he's paying $750 for that $1,000 stamp. And now you are paying 10%. So now 35% of that sale price is going to people who aren't you, whether it's the state or the auction company or whoever.
So now you're down to $675.
So now you're getting $675 for a $1,000 stamp, and that's something you have to watch out. Because if you have a $5,000 stamp, you have to sit there and say, okay, where is the best place that I can sell this? Because I'm only going to get 2/3 of this money.
Now, we've been talking about auction houses, but sometimes an auction house will buy directly from a consignor. Instead of putting it up at auction, they may have 6 auctions a year, and the next 2 auctions, your items don't fit in the kind of material that they have in those auctions. And they want to wait 6 months or 8 months to run that item. Sometimes they'll make you an offer to buy it.
And sometimes people take it because they sit here and say, okay, our next auction, well, H.R. Harmer closed their auction 2 weeks ago. That means if you went to H.R. Harmer today and said, here, sell these stamps, they would say, okay, our next auction is in April, and we close 60 days after that. You give us the stuff today, and you will probably get a check in June.
Yes.
And you say, I don't want to wait till June. And they'll say, well, okay, we will buy it from you now, but we will give you a discounted amount, obviously. So if they think it's worth $10,000, they may give you $7,500. And you say, okay, now I have a choice. Do I wait 9 months for an extra $2,500? Sometimes they say yes, and sometimes they say no. I'd rather have the money now. And the reason why the auction companies take the money off is because they are taking a risk.
Well,
9 months from now, who knows what this is worth?
Yes, mm-hmm. and also they're tying up their own capital.
Yeah.
So they have the cost of an investment in there as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of costs involved. And so, you know, when somebody says, oh, he's only giving me half of what it sold for, it's like, you should feel lucky.
What
you got it today.
But you also have to consider, what if it goes up at auction and it doesn't sell?
Exactly, yeah.
He risked half of what it would should
right?
go
now
for.
Now he's stuck with the material that he already paid for. Now, if you consigned it and it doesn't sell,
he puts a stamp on it, and mails it back to you.
Yeah, he'll either put it in the roll it over and put it in the next auction, or he'll send it back to you.
Yeah. So people who are selling, you really need to know how the auction operates. And you know, there are horror stories that I look at and I go, that's not a horror story, that's just you not knowing what the hell you were doing.
Yeah.
So I guess the big thing is, when you're going to deal with an auction house as a seller, talk to them. They're more than happy to explain things, to walk you through the process, because they want to sell your stuff.
Oh yeah,
they want, because that's how they make money. So don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to walk up to them and just create develop a friendship, a relationship, ask questions.
The last thing is that when you consign something to an auction, you always have the fear that, oh my God, you know, I just put this $1,000 stamp on and wonder if it only sells for $100. And so the last thing is, you talk to them and say, I want to put a reserve on this. Now, of course, the auction companies never want a reserve because they want everything gone.
Yeah, at least a possibility of a no sale.
They don't want a no sale. They don't get paid by no sales. With one exception, sometimes read the back of the rules. Sometimes they'll charge you a lotting fee when it doesn't sell. So you may get a bill for $25. You know, it won't be a lot of money. It'll be like $25. But you'll get the item back and owe them money. So you have to sit there and say, how much the stamp is worth $1,000. I know it's worth $1,000. Okay, I take 25% off because the person has to pay the tip and tax. So now I'm at $750. Do I put my reserve at $750? Well, wonder if nobody buys it then, Maybe I put it at 600. Maybe I put it at 500.
You know, that's another thing where the auctioneer's discretion comes in handy is you don't put a reserve on it, but he also knows what it's worth.
Yeah.
And he won't accept a bid that is too low.
Yeah.
Obviously, things go up and down in value, and he knows what they should sell for. And he's not going to sell it for a ridiculous bid. He's just going to say, no, we'll leave it as unsold. So the auctioneer will protect the seller.
Okay. Do I have $1,000? $10. No, go away.
Exactly. And this goes for buyers, too. When you look at the auction catalog, generally speaking, they don't show catalog value anymore. They show
they
estimates.
Do. They do. They show usually the catalog value will be in the description, the lot description, and then there will be a separate section that says what the estimate. So it might say catalog value $5,000, estimate $1,400 to $1,800.
Right.
And why is that? It might be condition, it might be some other reason why that estimate is much, much lower than the catalog value.
Be aware that generally speaking, and this obviously doesn't apply 100% of the time, but generally speaking, you can sometimes get lots for half the estimated value.
Sometimes.
Almost never will you get it 51% less. It's like 50%.
Yeah.
And so what somebody will say is, okay, you have a minimum of $700. We're going to estimate it at $1,500.
A good rule of thumb is don't submit any bids less than $750.
Right. So
that's a good rule of thumb. Now, don't expect to win it at $750 because you probably won't.
But well, at least anybody who steps in with one increment, you know, pays $10 more and you lose it.
Yeah, but they won't, and any auction house shouldn't accept a bid less than half of the low estimate.
So buyers need to be aware, if you're sending in a mail bid, where the bidding probably starts. In a lot of places, it starts at half the estimated value. That's where it starts. As a seller, you need to figure out where you want the bidding to start, which is the minimum amount that you will accept and the minimum that the auctioneer will take, because he doesn't want, you know, if you walked in with that $1,000 stamp and say, my minimum is $1,000, he's going to say, thank you very much, because I know that the person is going to take 25% off that $1,000 just to pay me and the taxes.
Mm-hmm. So are there any auction houses that you guys would recommend?
Oh, I don't know how fair it is, but I will. I'll put down the people who have treated the podcast well. Okay? These guys are actually personal friends. I very much like the two that I like the best are Kelleher and H.R. Harmer. They have been very good friends to me personally. They have been very good sales and buying people, and they have supported the podcast.
Excellent.
Siegel is obviously way up there, too. Thank you, Scott, for all the lunches. And let's see, are we
Regency Superior
in
St. Louis.
Regency is great.
Harmer Schau,
he doesn't like me, so.
Well, that doesn't I don't care about that. But they do have good auctions. They have good material.
They do have good material. And Chris, give me a plug and I'll say nicer things about you.
Oh, you guys listed some earlier, too. I remember you were talking about ones that are out there.
So. I deal with almost every single auction house. Oh, there's another thing about buying. Buyers, when you buy, realize that not everything sells at an auction. Might be worthwhile to ask what didn't sell and how much it is if you're interested.
Oh, yeah. There'll usually be an after-sale price.
Yeah, you have your after-auction.
Unsold.
Yep.
All right.
Let's open this, hopefully, $50,000.
If it is, it's going to be on camera.
Oh, man. We just got one in. Yeah.
It's like a flurry all of a sudden. They're being reported, like, weekly now.
I'm kind of curious if the... I can see that... It's $12 normal postage. And I didn't get a card that says congratulations.
Darn. Well, like congratulations, you got $12 postage.
Well, like I told Cash, if we ever did get one, we might have to maybe bleep it because we'll all, you know, be saying, oh.
Oh, yeah, there will be a lot of bleeping. If
and sirens.
Oh, is there any update on the Australian one that was used?
No.
Not yet.
Nothing surfaced. Yeah. It's just a rumor right now.
Okay. Yep.
Still a rumor.
Okay, you can email us at stampshowhere today@gmail.com, Twitter at stampshowht, Facebook stampshowheretoday, and our website www.stampshowheretoday.com with your questions and comments. You can now leave your questions and comments on our Google Voice answering machine anytime, country code 1-949-873-4298. There is also a link to a Google Voice on our website so you can make the call from your computer. And on that note, keep collecting.
Hi, this is Chris Harmer of Harmer Show Auctions, and I'm at Stamp Show here today.
Hi, this is Bobby Prager with Gary Posner Incorporated, based in Long Island, New York, and New Jersey. And I just want to say that the stamp hobby is alive and well here, and we love buying and selling stamps. We pay very, very, very good prices, so we'd rather buy 9 out of 10 collections than just a very small percentage of what we see. Also, check us out on our website at GaryPosnerInc.com. You'll see a lot of great stamps at great prices. And any questions, just feel free to call Bob at 1-800-323-4279. That's Bob Prager at 1-800-323-4279. And my cell number is 917-538-8133. Happy hunting out there.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurfs, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today.
Where's the beef?
Address unknown. No such number.